All right, so I have a question for you. If someone wrongs you, if someone wrongs us, what do you do? If someone wrongs you. So a few options for you. One option is that you would seek revenge. So I think of like the Joker, and I think even the Green Goblin. I feel like their characters are basically born in things that were done to them that were wrong, and their whole identity is now shaped by seeking revenge. Sometimes we do that. We feel like we can seek revenge against someone who's hurt us and wronged us, and that will somehow solve it. Another option for us when someone's done something wrong to us is that we try to stuff the pain inside. We stuff it and hope that it just will go away. So we were on the 20s retreat last weekend, and our speaker had this great illustration from it, and I'm just going to steal it. So here it is. So imagine that you've got a helium balloon, and the helium balloon is the pain from something that somebody has done to you that was wrong. And your job is to keep the helium balloon from floating up and touching the ceiling. So you're going to push it down, and then, of course, it's going to come back up. And you're going to push it down. So you can just, it's almost like you're playing basketball with an invisible balloon, right? You're going to keep pushing it down, pushing it down, pushing it down. Now, we know that helium balloons, after a couple of days, they kind of lose their strength. And they become weak, and eventually they would just sink to the ground, and it's all over. You're done. But that's not the way it works with our pain. It's like a helium balloon that is eternally strong. And if we keep trying to stuff it, it's just going to keep trying to pop itself back up. And eventually, we got so many balloons we're trying to push down because of all the pain that's going on in our hearts and in our past that it's not a good solution or a response to our pain. So a third option for us when someone wrongs us is to commiserate with others who have also been wronged. Sometimes we do this with our friends. Sometimes you'll hear this in music. Often this comes out in music a lot. And so, like, listen to this little clip from this song, and you'll recognize, I think, the idea. All right. You know, some of you know the words of this song. Okay, that's good, right there. So it's got a happy melody. It's got a peppy. But the words are so depressing. And it's all about, you had a bad day, you're taking one down, you say you don't know, you tell me a lie, you work on a smile, and you go for a ride. Like, and I kept listening, like, I was looking at these lyrics thinking, oh, this clearly ends in a resolution, right? Okay, we resonate, we all have bad days, yes, we can connect, and then where's the hope, right? The song's going to move to a hopeful ending. It doesn't. It just stays there. You had a bad day. That's it. But here's what's really interesting about it. We find a sense of emotional connection to that. And even though there's no solution given, sometimes that's all we need. Hey, somebody else had a bad day. All right. Now, it's not a good option, but it is one that we choose sometimes. Now, the biblical option when someone has wronged us is to forgive them. And forgiveness is a hard act. C.S. Lewis says this about forgiveness. Everyone says forgiveness is a lovely idea until they have something to forgive. See, forgiveness is hard. Forgiveness involves a surrender of our own will. But forgiveness also brings with it release and freedom. You know, it's like with those balloons, freedom or forgiveness pops the balloon's power. It no longer, when we forgive, we no longer need to commiserate with others because we've connected with the Lord and He's released us. We no longer have to seek revenge because we trust God's sovereign hand to do His work and in His will. It even says in the Scriptures, let the Lord seek revenge. Let Him be the judge. He is the sovereign King. So today, we're going to continue on and finish our study through Genesis. And Joseph is the main character through this story. And he models for us this concept of forgiveness. You know, his brothers have wronged him so badly. You know, when they last saw, when the brothers and Joseph last saw each other, the brothers watched him walk away as a slave. He's pleading with them to rescue him and to quit this wrong, and they're just callously watching. The Scriptures actually tell us that they hated him. And after these 13 years of slavery and imprisonment, Joseph has been working through that wrong that has been done to him. You know what? Joseph is, he's just a man. I'm sure there were times when he wanted revenge. I'm sure he wrestled with stuffing that pain. And I'm sure that he commiserated with others. But in the end, he found forgiveness. It even tells us in the end of chapter 41 that he names his first son Manasseh. You remember that? And Manasseh means that it is because God has made me forget all of the trouble from my father's household. It's not because, remember we talked about this a few weeks ago, it's not because Joseph has sort of stuffed it and forgotten it. It's because he's chosen to release his brothers from the pain. It's as if he's moving forward in his life and those hurts are no longer shackling and holding him back. He's free because he is forgiven. Now, there's one more choice for us. It's the last choice, and it's the best choice for us when someone has wronged us. And Joseph models that for us today in this passage of Scripture we're going to read. And that is that beyond forgiveness is reconciliation. Reconciliation is the best outcome when there is conflict. Reconciliation by its nature means you take two things that are opposed and you bring them together. So in a relationship, you have people that are enemies and you bring them into friendship. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18 tells us that even how God himself brings reconciliation to you and I, his followers, when he says, "All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ." So when we reconcile with other people, we are simply modeling and living out what God has already offered to us, this reconciliation. It's the best choice. It's not always possible, but it is the best choice. So as we're reading about this reconciliation process here with Joseph, we're going to be turning in our scriptures to Genesis chapter 42. And we're going to read a lot of scripture today. Just get ready. So if you have your Bible, get ready to flip through. The scriptures will also be on the screens. And what I'd like for you to be paying attention to is this. Because why did Joseph take his brothers through the steps that he takes them through? Was Joseph seeking revenge when he took them through these steps? Was he seeking to punish them? Was he seeking in this a little bit of a way to repay them for the harsh things that they had done to him? Because he does some very harsh and confusing things to his brothers. And I think the answer to all of those questions is no. He's not seeking revenge. He's not trying to be mean. But he's modeling for us the wise process of learning, can I trust you? As he's moving toward reconciliation. Because some people have hurt us so badly that it would be foolish and unwise to, after we grant forgiveness, to rush back into relationship with them because they are not safe people. Joseph models for us this process of how to go through a slow and wise and discerning process of reconciliation. So if you would, turn with me to Genesis 42. We'll start reading together in verse 1. When Jacob, that's the dad of this whole of the whole clan here, when Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you keep looking at each other?" He continued, "I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we can live and not die." And then 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with the others, because he was afraid that harm might come to him. So Israel's sons were among those who went to buy grain, for there was a famine in the land of Canaan also. So there's a famine everywhere. Everybody's going to Egypt. Everybody's getting grain in Egypt. Now Joseph, in verse 6, was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked, from the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. And then he remembered his dreams about them. Remember, the dreams were that all of his family were going to bow before him. And when he told them the dreams, that was the reason why they despised and why they hated him. So Joseph is now standing there. He's watching his brothers bowing before him. He remembers the dream and he sees all of it coming full circle. And he says to them, "You are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected." He is messing with them. He knows they're not spies. "No, my lord," they answered. "Your servants have come to buy food. We are all the sons," and this is their justification for why they're not spies. "We're all sons of one man." Nobody has a family of all spies. That's basically what they're saying. "Your servants are honest men, not spies." "No," he said to them, "you have come to see where our land is unprotected." But they replied, "Your servants," now they're going to go into more detail justifying, "your servants were 12 brothers, the sons of one man who lives in the land of Canaan. The youngest is now with our father, and one is no more." The one who's no more, that's Joseph. He's thinking, "That's me." He's probably thinking, "I am around, and I got a surprise coming for you." Verse 14, Joseph said to them, "It's just as I told you, you're spies. And this is how you will be tested. As sure as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you're telling the truth. If you are not, then as surely as Pharaoh lives, you are spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. It's kind of like, as I was reading through this, I kind of thought about that television show, Undercover Boss. The boss goes in and he watches and he observes the character and the trustworthiness of his employees. Joseph here has the advantage of knowing them, and yet they don't know him. And he's going to take them through a number of tests to determine how trustworthy and honest and morally based these brothers now are. Because when he knew them before, about 15 years in the past, they were wicked, mean-spirited, cruel men. And although he has forgiven them, they were, as he knew them, not a safe person to reconcile with. Chapter 42, let's keep reading in verse 18. On the third day, they've been kept in prison now 3 days, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." That's a strange comment to be made from someone they thought was an Egyptian ruler. He's speaking their language. He's saying, "I fear God." That's the same God you guys worship. "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, and while the rest of you go and take grain back to your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother to me, so that your words may be verified and that you may not die." This they proceeded to do. So the first test is now set in place. "Bring back Benjamin, and I'll let your other brother free from prison." Will they choose to allow their brother to stay in jail, or will they come back bringing Benjamin with them to rescue him? That's the test. Because loving brothers, brothers that are committed to one another, brothers that are trusting in the sovereign hand of God, they would come back and they would rescue their brother. That's not who they were 15 years ago. Chapter 42, verse 21. Look at how they respond. They say to one another, "Surely we're being punished because of our brother." That's their brother Joseph. "We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us." Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you wouldn't listen. Now we must give an accounting for his blood. They did not realize that Joseph could understand them as they're talking in Hebrew, because he had been formerly using an interpreter with them to help hide his identity. Joseph turned away from them and began to weep, but then turned back and spoke to them again. And he had Simeon taken from them and bound before their eyes, and he puts him in prison. You know, there's something in these verses that reveals the brothers' acknowledgement that they had done something wrong. They don't come right out and say the words, "I'm sorry," or "we messed up." But you see interwoven in there, they realize we did a really bad thing when we did not save our brother. We sold him as a slave, and that was wrong. And that confession brings to Joseph the first piece of reconciliation for his own heart. And, you know, this happens for us as well. You know, when we have some kind of a disagreement or a broken relationship with someone, someone said something hurtful, something's done something hurtful to us, there, even if we can forgive them, if there's not a conversation of admission of some kind of wrongdoing, there's a wall between us and that person. You know, we can do small talk. We can do everything we can to try to make the relationship everything it is. But there's still a wall that's built there. And in this situation here, we see that part of that wall is broken down, and Joseph's emotions start to pour out because he starts to weep, because he's starting to feel his heart being re-knit with his brothers. That's a beautiful thing. That's a great thing even when it happens with us too. Powerful, powerful things happen when we forgive and then we communicate that with each other. It's amazing to me how I can be frustrated and grumbling and mad at somebody because something that's been done that was wrong, and then they come and they say, "You know what? I really messed up. I'm sorry." And I'm not talking about like major things. I'm just talking about normal stuff that happens in life. And in an instant, that wall I'd built in my heart is just gone. And there's restored relationship. This is a big wall between him and his brothers, but it's going to come down piece by piece. Now, we're going to carry on reading verse 25 in chapter 42 and just see now how he continues to set this this test and challenge their character a little bit more. In verse 25, Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, to put each man's silver back in his sack and give them provisions for their journey. And after this was done for them, they loaded their grain on their donkeys and left. So now, not only are they going to have to bring Benjamin back to get Simeon released, they're going to get a little ways down the road and they're going to realize, "Oh my, we didn't pay for this grain. They're going to think we stole it. We thought we paid for it. How'd this money get back in our bags? Everybody's got their money. What happened?" Joseph is even mounting up the pressure to see how they will respond to this test. In the face of adversity, in the face of potential personal hardship and punishment and imprisonment and slavery, how will they respond to this test to come back for their brother? So they go home, they tell their dad all about it, and dad says, "There ain't no way you're taking my youngest son, my favorite loved son Benjamin, back to Egypt." And so they stay home, they eat the grain, life continues on, and in a year, the grain is gone. And Jacob says, "You guys got to go back to Egypt to get some more grain." And they're like, "Well, remember that deal? We got to take Benjamin." And they have this big conversation, and Jacob, dad, he says, "All right, take a bunch of gifts. Take double money. Pay them back what they think you might have stolen, and take a bunch of money to pay them again." They're doing everything they can to make this thing right. And in chapter 43, we're going to continue reading starting in verse 15. So the men, the brothers, took the gifts and doubled the amount of silver, and Benjamin also. They hurried down to Egypt and presented themselves to Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with him, he said to the steward of his house, "Take these men to my house, slaughter an animal and prepare dinner. They are to eat with me at noon." So the man did as Joseph told him and took the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were frightened when they were taken to his house. They thought, "We were brought here because of the silver that was put back in our sacks the first time. He wants to attack us and overpower us and seize us as slaves and take our donkeys." So they went up to Joseph's steward and they spoke to him at the entrance of his house. And they said, "Please, sir, listen, we came down here the first time to buy food. But at the place where we stopped for the night, we opened our sack and each of us found his silver, the exact weight in the mouth of the sack. So we have brought it back with us. We have also brought additional silver with us to buy food. We don't know who put our silver back in our sacks." "It's all right," he said. "Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of our father, has given you treasure in your sacks. I received your silver." And then he brought Simeon out to them. Wow, that must have felt good for those guys. They've passed their first test. They've brought Benjamin. They've proven their loyalty to their brother, even in the midst of potential hardship. Now, we're going to see the second test revealed here in verse 33. Chapter 43, verse 33. "The men had been seated before him in the order of their ages, from the firstborn to the youngest. And they looked at each other in astonishment." And they're astonished because Joseph knew how to put them in age order. "And when the portions were served to them from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's." Let's just stop right there. Five times, right? Like, this is a big old feast banquet. Everybody's got a big plate and everybody's got a full plate. Benjamin gets five times as much. Like, think, that must have been like a mountain of food. It must have been so big, like it would have been ridiculous for anyone to eat it. I mean, you got all of different foods mixing in with each other. Some of you wouldn't like that at all. You want your mashed potatoes separated from your meat, your vegetables over to the side. I mean, Benjamin's got a mountain of food. So the test is, how will the older brothers respond when Benjamin, the youngest favored son, is spoiled? He gets all of this extra. Will the older brothers, will they despise him? Will they treat him harshly, just like they treated Joseph? Or will they be kind? And it tells us in the, it's just a short little phrase, but it's a very important one at the end of verse 34. "So they feasted and drank freely with him." The brothers hold no animosity toward the fact that their youngest brother is now getting extra stuff. No problem. Like, that seems like no big deal to us. Potentially. I hope that seems like no big deal to you if somebody got five times as much food. But to the older brothers back in the day, that would have been so offensive that they would have started to despise that younger favorite son. They would have thought, "I deserve that. I am older. I deserve that. I am in the place of position where that kind of spoil should be heaped upon me." So they passed the second test. Now, the third test is coming up. Chapter 44, verse 1. "Now Joseph gave these instructions to the steward of the house. Fill the men's sacks with as much food as they can carry and put each man's silver in the mouth of the sack. Then put my cup, the silver one, in the mouth of the youngest one's sack along with the silver for his grain." And he did as Joseph said. As morning dawned, the men were set on their way with their donkeys. They had not gone far from the city when Joseph said to his steward, "Go after those men at once. And when you catch up with them, you say this to them, 'Why have you repaid good with evil? Isn't this the cup my master drinks and also one he uses for divination? This is a wicked thing you have done.' So when he caught up with them, he repeated these words to them. But they said to him, 'Why does my lord say such things? Far be it from your servants to do anything like this. We even brought back to you from the land of Canaan the silver we found inside the mouths of our sacks. Why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die.'" They're very confident that none of them have taken this cup. and the rest of us will become my Lord's slaves. Very well then, he said, let it be as you say. Whoever's found to have it will become my slave. He changes the deal a little bit. I'm not going to kill him, but he's going to become my slave. And the rest of you will be free from blame. Each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground. They opened it up, and then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this, they tore their clothes. Like 15 years ago, the brothers stood callously and watched their younger brother walk away as a slave. Now they see their younger brother caught in some kind of a trap, and they are not hard-hearted and they are not calloused. They tear their clothes with agony and grief for the trouble that he is in now. Then they all loaded their donkeys and returned to the city. So Joseph, now he confronts them about stealing the silver cup when they get back to the city. The brothers, it's a beautiful thing. The brothers stand together as one and they pledge, we will all be your slave for this wrongdoing. Joseph says, no, I don't want all of you as my slaves. I only want the man who stole my cup. You can all go free. I'll just keep Benjamin. Oh, man. They're like, they're dying. Like, we can't go home. They're just thinking, we cannot go home to dad again and tell him the youngest is gone. They are just filled with grief. So in verse 33, chapter 44, Judah goes and he's pleading now with Joseph. He says, now then, please let your servant, let me remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy. And let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me, or do not let me see the misery that would come upon my father. They have passed test number 3. They could have gone home. They had all the money, they had all the grain, and they had their personal safety. But they did not have Benjamin. And they said, we can't do it. They're different men. They have been changed over the course of time, the growth of their character and hard circumstances, and God's hand on them. They are different men. And in these three tests, the test to bring Benjamin back so that they can get Simeon out, the test of the five times extra food for Benjamin, and now the test of Benjamin being sentenced to slavery, Joseph now sees that he has forgiven them, yes, and now they are safe people to reconcile with. Chapter 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all of his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. That's everyone except his brothers. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. They are very confused because they have just gone through this very taxing and stressful ordeal over the course of a little over a year, dealing with this man who's the ruler over all of Egypt. And they're interpreting his actions as confusing and cruel. But I don't think they were cruel. It tells us in chapter 41 that Joseph was wise and discerning. And through this whole process, he's been testing them. Because if he just said, hey, you're my brothers, welcome back. Hey, you guys did some bad things to me. And they're like, oh yeah, we're really sorry. He's like, oh great, and gives a big hug and everything's fine. Like, there's something about that that's very naive. They have been hurt by him so badly that only a fool would rush back in. And without letting the character of the person be revealed, enter back into a relationship. I think we see some principles here that bear just kind of talking about it, that relates to both forgiveness and reconciliation. Let's talk about those and then we'll get back into this story. Because forgiveness is a vertical relationship. It's a vertical kind of a dynamic that happens between us and God. When we release the person from the wrong that they have done to us, we don't have to be asked for forgiveness to give it. That's like the best situation. We are called to forgive even before a person asks. That's because it's primarily between us and God. And we open ourselves up, when we forgive someone, we open ourselves up to the beginnings of God's healing hand working in our hearts and in our souls. And in the forgiving, there is an acceptance that God's sovereign hand is over everything. When we try to hold on to those things, hold on to the wrongs, and hold on to the pain, there's something in that that recognizes even within ourselves, oh, I think I'm going to fix this up. I'm going to somehow resolve this situation. I know how to deal with this. And when we forgive, we release it. And we say, okay, God, this is painful for me to release, but I release it to your hands. Now, beyond forgiveness is reconciliation. And reconciliation happens now between people that have already dealt with forgiveness. You can't jump to reconciliation without experiencing the forgiveness component. Reconciliation comes next. So reconciliation is a horizontal, relational thing that happens with us and other people. It's when forgiveness is communicated to the person who has offended us. Forgiveness is communicated. In Genesis chapter 45, moving on in the story here, in verse 4, look at how Joseph communicates this forgiveness to them. He says to his brothers, "Come close to me." And when they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you." Jumping ahead to verse 14 in the same chapter. "Then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept. And Benjamin embraced him, weeping. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And afterward, his brothers talked with him." In these verses, we see that Joseph himself is communicating to his brothers, "Look, it's okay. I have forgiven you. Let's move into relationship with each other. Come here. Let me give you a hug. It's okay. God had a plan. I don't hold you responsible." And at the end of it, we see that that forgiveness is accepted by his brothers when they sit and they talk with each other. Sadly, the brothers do not fully accept the forgiveness that Joseph is offering. But they're accepting it enough so that some restoration and some reconciliation is reestablished and built between the family. And just the last thing to note is that when reconciliation comes, it results in peace between two people or a number of people, whoever had the conflict. Peace is now there. And in our situation with Joseph is and his family, his entire family is moved down into Egypt. They live in the land of Goshen, the best part of Egypt. Peace and harmony and friendship is reestablished in the family. They're reunited in these wonderful, tear-filled moments. And it's a really beautiful thing. Now, I said before that they don't quite get it. The brothers don't quite fully accept it. And look at how kindly Joseph responds to this. So we're going to jump ahead now to chapter 50 and bring some closure here to a lot of what we've been studying here in Genesis. Chapter 50. And we're going to start off with verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they're living in Egypt, they've been down there a long time, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" Wow, that is a sad, sad question. Because in the midst of all of the kindness that Joseph has showed his brothers, they still wonder, is he out to get us? And sometimes that happens with us as well, where we hold back from embracing and re-engaging in relationship. And I think that we can see here, just one of the things that comes out of this story is that when forgiveness is communicated, and when we start to see the character of the people that are involved, God's ideal plan is for us to move back toward one another in our hearts and in our relationships and experience full reconciliation. And sadly, the brothers missed out on some of that. And look at how kindly Joseph communicates to his brothers. If it were me, and my brothers just told me all this, and I heard, "Oh man, Dad's dead, you're probably going to be mean to us now," I'd be like, "Give me a break, guys." I'd probably launch into a lecture. Look at all the good things I've done for you. Look at how I've taken care of you. And Joseph says this, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. He accommodates to them exactly where they are. He knew they needed a voice of kindness, a heart of kindness to help win over their distrust, to win over their fears. And I think for us, as we consider this concept of forgiveness and potentially reconciliation, you know, there are a few things that hold us back and that held up some of the people in this story as well. Sometimes we're just unwilling to face the pain that we have experienced. And because we're unwilling to face the pain, we cannot forgive and we cannot release. Sometimes pride gets in the way. And we might deal with somebody in our heart and we might forgive them, but there's no way we're going to communicate that to them because then that would require humility. Sometimes we want to be in the seat of judgment and we want to be able to pass judgment on those people. And so we hold on to the hurt and the pain in the midst of our pride. Because there is a little bit of confusion that goes along like these lines. Well, if I forgive them, then that means that they're going to go free. And I don't want them to go free. They've hurt me. So I'm going to keep holding on to this because they deserve some level of punishment. And that's our pride, holding on to that. Another hindrance is that they're a dangerous or an unworthy person to trust. They're untrustworthy. And if you have people in your lives that have hurt you deeply, it may not be wise to re-engage and to develop a close relationship again because they're not safe. They've hurt you too badly. And you see here in the story of Joseph how wise he was. I think at any point along the way, Joseph was ready, if his brothers revealed that they were still the wicked and mean-spirited men that they were in the past, I think Joseph at any point was ready to just sell them grain and never reveal his true identity to them. I don't think he was going to punish them. Like, you can talk about this over lunch and think about it the rest of the day. Like, what would Joseph have done? I don't think Joseph would have treated them harshly. Joseph has already dealt with it in his heart. He's already forgiven them. But I do not think he would have reconciled the relationship with them if he felt like they were not trustworthy, safe people. And for you, if you're in that kind of a situation where you feel like there are people in your lives like that, you just need to walk very slowly and wisely through that process. Get some wise counsel and some people around you to help bounce that off of them. Get prayer support. Seek a counselor. I mean, we have a great biblical counseling program here at our church. Maybe you need to talk with one of them, or maybe you need to go to the Christian Counseling Center. Talk with somebody about this stuff because it's very, very close to our hearts. And the scriptures tell us to guard our hearts and to be very wise. And you know, there's one last, I think, kind of reason why we sometimes will not forgive or move toward reconciliation. And that's because we're focusing only on the people in the situation. We're only focusing on what's right in front of us. And it's a bit of an irony because the entire sermon this morning is focusing on the people and the situations. And hopefully my questions have even prompted you thinking about the people and the situations in your life. When in fact, there's no solution that comes from that. Because if we keep focusing on the people, we still feel the hurt. We keep thinking about the wrong. And it's only by shifting our focus up to God that we actually get a new perspective on the situation and we actually find the ability to release someone. So if we focus too much on the people in the situation, it's a hindrance, it's a blockage for us to move toward forgiveness and reconciliation. Look, there are stories of people that have endured horrible things that have forgiven and moved toward reconciliation because they're focusing on God. They trust Him with whatever comes. They trust Him because they've experienced so much love from Him. And He gives supernatural strength and supernatural power. The band's going to come out here and they're going to play just a little bit of music. And I'm just going to ask you, if you would, to bow your heads. And I'm going to give you a few things to think about, some questions to process as a way to bring some closure to this topic, and ask you to just listen to the Lord and see if there are some people that come to mind that you potentially need to forgive or move toward reconciliation. The first question is a pretty obvious one, and it's this. Is there anyone that you feel like the Lord wants you to forgive? I mean, is it potential that you've been seeking revenge, or you've been seeking to stuff pain, or you've been seeking that path of commiserating with others with your hurts? I mean, are you holding on with clenched fists and experiencing the resentment and the hurt and the bitterness that comes with that? And if so, I just wonder, would you be willing today to just release your hands? Release the hurt. And to step into maybe very, very unfamiliar and scary ground and just to forgive them. I mean, is there anyone that maybe you have a broken or damaged relationship with that you need to reconcile? Maybe you've forgiven them in your heart, but you haven't ever told them. You haven't ever moved back into relationship, and you know that there's a wall between the two of you. And if they are safe, are you willing to move toward them, taking that step of reconciliation? And then the last question would be this, as it relates to you and God personally. Have you been resisting His love? Kind of like the brothers in this story. Joseph kept telling them, "Hey, I love you guys. We're good. I'm going to take care of you." And they just kept holding back, holding back, holding back. I mean, have you been doing that to God? As He continues to just tell you are loved and you are forgiven, perhaps you've been saying, "Yeah, but I think you're going to get me someday." And maybe today could just be a chance for you to release that finally and just surrender to Him wholeheartedly. I would just encourage you as you listen to the Lord to take the scary step of trusting whatever He's revealing to you now.